Samantha Olson.
Anderson, members of the board, Samantha Olson, your staff counsel again. Mine is indeed a little bit. I'm here to just present a brief overview about the general regulatory scope of TMDL to prepare for Ben's item, which gets into the specifics of our implementation scoping document. Don't worry about the text on this slide, but I put this up here to underscore the point that, okay, so this is actually the International River Boating Scale of Difficulty that ranges from Class 1, which is real slow-moving water, flotilla, all the way up to Class 5, which is extremely difficult to boat, almost certain death for inexperienced boaters. And it's a good analogy because the Klamath, in fact, does have a Class 4 whitewater run on it. And also, I've likened the Klamath TMDL implementation to a Class 4 level of difficulty.
Maybe 5.
I think 5. I think 5.
Special. You're extremely optimistic, apparently, Samantha.
We'll go back to the box. Let's see. Three is challenging. So most TMDLs, in fact, are challenging. I have yet to see a Class 1 TMDL. And you can see why, because it is the program that's charged to take another look when our traditional core regulatory controls aren't working for some reason. The water body is still listed as impaired. And so thus, the TMDL program is charged with creating plans that consider all sources and causes of impairment and allocating responsibility for corrective measures, regardless of the sources or causes that will attain water quality standards. TMDL involves a two-step process. One is first the development of the technical TMDL. This board's had several updates on that process. And then that becomes accompanied by an implementation plan. That's what we're here to discuss today. So the technical TMDL establishes allowable loadings or quantifiable parameters for the water body. And this loading capacity is then provides the reference for calculating the pollution reduction that's necessary to bring the water body into compliance. The technical TMDL assigns allocations in the form of waste load allocations and load allocations. There are two types. Waste load allocations are for point sources, and load allocations are for non-point sources. Waste load allocations defined by the regs as the portion of a receiving water's loading capacity that's allocated to one of its existing or future point sources of pollution, and that constitutes a type of water quality-based effluent limit. And so the load allocation I define as everything else. That's not a waste load allocation. It's defined in the regs as the portion of a receiving water's loading capacity that's attributed either to one of its existing or future non-point sources or to natural background sources. Wherever possible, the technical TMDL should distinguish between background and non-point source loadings. So once that's done, the purpose of the implementation plan, which is step two, is to translate this information into technical TMDL into discrete and identifiable actions that will bring the water body into compliance. The implementation plan must redress all violations of water quality standards if possible and may use any combination of existing regulatory tools to do so. And the implementation plan should take into account where the regional board may lack implementation authority. So let's start with the easiest ones, waste load allocations. I said apply to point source discharge of pollutants to surface bodies. Those are regulated by this board through the issuance of NPDES permits. You're well familiar with those. They're issued pursuant to Clean Water Act Section 402. Point sources are discharged through a discrete conveyance such as a ditch or channel or pipe. The NPDES permit that's issued must be consistent with a waste load allocation in the TMDL. I just want to add also that ag runoff often comes from a pipe, but it's specifically exempted from NPDES permitting requirements. I also want to add that the downstream state has certain procedural remedies for an upstream state's issuance of NPDES permits in the Clean Water Act. That's not the case with non-point source discharges that are occurring in an upstream state. So moving on now to load allocation implementation. Our standard permit under the Port of Cologne, our state law, is through a waste discharge requirement. Discharges of waste that are not subject to NPDES permits require the issuance of a WDR unless otherwise waived. So WDRs are a standard permit to implement load allocations, and this deals generally with runoff from non-point sources. You're used to those through our timber permits. You've seen those through our grazing, that kind of thing. It can also be discharges to land or groundwater. Typically, for the land management types of permits, they don't prescribe specific effluent limits like an MPDS permit. The WDR can prescribe requirements such as limitations on temperature, toxicity, or pollutant levels, but generally the permits provide more flexibility so that the discharger chooses from an array of, for example, best management practices in order to meet the requirements. There are other regulatory tools available to this board to implement load allocations for discharges of waste. I'll just run through those. You can issue a conditional waiver or a waiver, and those can contain very similar requirements to that of a waste discharge requirement. Prohibition, we have cleanup and abatement orders, cease and desist orders, time schedule orders, investigative orders pursuant to Water Code Section 13.267, administrative civil liability. And then there's a tool where you can certify another agency's regulatory program if you can make certain findings. That would also need to be covered by a waiver, but that's also a potential tool. I also want to mention that for discharges that are subject to federal permitting, it needs a federal permit from some federal agency, there's Clean Water Act Section 401 that requires the issuance from the state of a water quality certification. In California, our regulations provide that if the project is related to water rights, that the State Water Board, Division of Water Rights, issues the 401 permit, not us. The 401 permit applies even when the federal law preempts our state law because it's pursuant to the Clean Water Act, which is a federal law, not the Port Colon. And, if there's any questions, just chime in. This is really meant to be informative so that you understand what we're working with as we get into the details of the Klamath. So feel free to interrupt and ask any questions that you may have. So what happens, though, if we don't have a discharge of waste or certain pollution sources we're not able to issue WDR for whatever reason? And here's just some examples that come to mind that might come up in a TMDL analysis. What if the discharge of waste does not occur in California? What about an orphan discharge? So an example would be an abandoned mine that's just leaking mercury. What if it's not a discharge of waste, it's something that's within the jurisdiction of another state agency? This board grappled with that in our Shasta TMDL, where we adopted a flow recommendation that needed to be implemented by the Division of Water Rights. What about a controllable water quality factor that's not related to a discharge of waste? One example I could think of is, say, invasive species. So somebody's not dumping New Zealand clams into the delta. They're multiplying there just by the nature of being there. But it is a water quality factor. Also, what if there's an extreme potential in a watershed for restoration? That's not necessarily linked to a discharge of waste. But we know if we took certain restoration actions, it would greatly improve the water quality. So these are just some examples that come to mind. There are probably others. Yes, Chairman.
It's not clear to me what you have examples, but the lead into that, you're saying these are things that the basin plan could include, we could have in the basin plan, but even though
yes.
The regional board, it's actions that we're not,
right.
We can take, or you're saying the basin plan can have in it something that an action that we can't take.
Right. Well, you have
otherwise
other options, and I'm going to get to that. I guess what I'm submitting to you is that the TMDL charges us to look at the watershed comprehensively, and there's bound to be items that come up that we don't necessarily permit, I guess, is my point. And I think the TMDL is meant to do that, and I think there is utility in exploring these sources that we may not necessarily, it's not what we standardly issue. It's not a standard pipe in the river dumping pollution, but that there's some utility in including a discussion of it in our basin plan and in our TMDL. And I'm going to give you some examples of that utility. So, for example, for controllable factors in California regulated by a separate state entity, there's a provision in the water code that requires other state agencies to comply with our basin plan. And so that came up in, and so state agencies that come to mind are Department of Fish and Game, State Water Board, Division of Water Rights, perhaps CAL FIRE, Department of Water Resources. What I'm suggesting in this slide is that other agencies can pick up on the work that we've done and implement in the way that they implement their programs, and they can use the information in the basin plan to do that. Does that make sense? In fact, that's exactly what we did in the Shasta TMDL. We included a flow recommendation. We acknowledged that we didn't have authority to change water rights, and that information is sitting there, and in fact has led to some viable discussions in the Shasta watershed about how to get, you know, that kind of in-stream cold water flow in that watershed. So what I'm suggesting to what I'm suggesting here is that there are ways that we can use this information that may not be through our permitting process. That's what this presentation is about. And so feel free to continue to ask questions, because I think it's tricky. It's class 3-4. I mean, it is, it's not what we're used to on a day-to-day basis. So I'm going to move on. So if you have a controllable factor, say regulated by a separate federal entity, let me just give one example. The basin plans are part of the comprehensive plans that FERC, that's the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, must consider when it issues a relicense for a hydro project. So that's another example where there's a statute that requires a different agency to look at our basin plan, and perhaps that agency has the implementing authority that we don't to require an action. I could also see a scenario where certain water quality requirements get folded into biological opinions pursuant to the Endangered Species Act or in a species recovery plan. This is a little bit separate, but if the source is actually a federal facility, Clean Water Act Section 313 applies to that. So you are sort of familiar with this. We went over this in the Shasta, the range of options for like non-regulatory implementation of load allocations. You could do nothing, and I submit to you that that's not a great option if everything else within your control adds up and you can't achieve compliance. Recommendations. You can make a recommendation to a non-regulatory entity. You can make a recommendation to a regulatory agency in California or to a non-California agency, and it's just a recommendation, and an agency can do with it what they will. You can also make a requirement of a California state agency, and I submit that we ought to work well in advance with that agency before we make it a requirement and make sure that that's the kind of requirement they're looking for, and especially if it's the State Water Board, because they have to approve our TMDL. And they would want to agree with the requirement that it's committing itself to. For restoration actions, and this list is not exhaustive. I just want to say there's bound to be more, but we're just kind of brainstorming possibilities here. But for restoration actions, one approach that's been used in Region 5 is to link the restoration to a discharge that you do have authority over. So to create some sort of incentive program or pollution trading. Also, even if you can't link it to a discharge, I think it's worth identifying in the TMDL the potential for restoration in case there is grant or funding, other funding options available that an NGO or another entity wants to pick up, or perhaps the state itself. So this is my list. It's not exhaustive, but I'll conclude that we are still in a scoping phase. You always want to scout a Class 4 rapid before running it. That's what we're doing now, and I invite questions and dialogue. I don't think our sandwiches are here yet, so.
All right. Questions from the board?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
Would it be possible to ask you to put this into some kind of a matrix?
Yes, you know, I was working on a flow chart, but it, as Clayton says, you know, once you start the flow chart, it leads to more stuff. They're just inherent like that. So we will have a flow chart, a regulatory flow chart, okay, that just is like a plant key popping in at different places. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Samantha, I have a question on, I'm on page 6 of the handout for slides. I don't know what slide it actually is. Controllable factors in California.
Yep.
if you can get back to that one on the screen up above.
The citation of the water code provision? How do I back up? There we go.
Thank you, Wayne Pierce.
That one. It's in the third line, the term shall comply. And I'm just not clear the way I heard you describe that. I read those words to say, I mean, again, we'll take the Shasta. That we have, it's part of the basin plan. We had a clause in there. My recollection, and it may not be the accurate way of describing it, but basically the flow numbers we put in there, but we deferred and said, well, it's really up to the state board. We can kind of put the words on the page, but if you read that, it says that all of these others, state offices, when they carry out activities, shall comply with a basin plan, and that isn't the way I would characterize what the action we took on the Shasta, that we didn't say,
right,
we're going to do this, and then the state board shall comply with what we did. We said we're going to write it down, and it's up to them, and, you know, really doesn't mean a whole lot. What it leaves here, it means something if the state board does something with it. So
we
it's the shall comply
it.
Part of the...
Okay, let me explain this. We carefully drafted that for that very reason. So it's really a two-step process. They shall comply with what we specify, which was a recommendation. And we did that specifically so they wouldn't, you know, it didn't say you shall implement, you know, flow reduction, you know, water right reductions. That's why we crafted it as a recommendation. So that's what they need to comply with. Does that make sense? So we have to be careful how we craft the language in our basin plan with this in mind.
Can I make a clarification? Because I think this is an incorrect premise of the Shasta TMDL. It was... You have water rights, you have water quality quantities, and then you have water quality standards. We went from water quality standards to water quality flow amounts, and we also further modified it by not a specified flow, but by a mandating a certain amount of cold water, which is unrelated necessarily to flow. You might have more flow, less flow. We're saying a certain amount of cold water. So we put that squarely in Judge Roby's decision that it was not a water rights, but it was a water quantity characteristic.
That's absolutely true. I mean, it was a flow recommendation. It was not a recommendation for specific water right action, and we made sure to craft it so that the division had lots of latitude in its implementation of what this board said. That's absolutely right. I mean, there's a difference between saying we need X amount of flow to make this water quality, you know, achieve our standards. To State Water Board, you shall open up an adjudication and cut everybody's water right back to a certain amount so that this flow is available. There's a lot of range of discretion there in which this board can craft. And I've said all along, you have to be, you have to work with that agency. I mean, it's not going to work if you just say, hey, State Board, do this. And then we'll be right back back here redoing the TMDL. So.
And after very careful consideration, they voted 5-0 to accept that.
I do want to say, and maybe we can bring this back and explore it more, but that has led to that recommendation, which didn't tell anybody they had to do anything, has led to really positive discussions on the Shasta. So I think that a recommendation has value from this agency. Just in being a recommendation, it doesn't have to be any more. It doesn't have to make anybody do anything. It's an agency that's qualified to make conclusions on water quality, making a recommendation. And so I do think it has a lot of value. And it worked on the Shasta. It's working. So it was a little controversial, and we had to say again and again that, no, we're not cutting anybody's water right. That's not what we do. So that's what we're looking at in the Klamath, but it's like times 10. You know, there are some tricky issues on a Klamath. It's two states. We have a hydro project that's regulated by FERC. You know, so there's some tricky issues there. And so I just want us to keep these options in mind as we move forward with our TMDL implementation.
But we take that a step further, though, right, Sam? We do permit agencies. We permit Forest Service. We permit some of the
That's
larger
true.
Entities out there, right?
We ought to distinguish where an agency has jurisdiction over a source.
But we also have jurisdiction over agencies, correct?
That's right. Where the agency is the discharger, absolutely.
That's correct.
That's absolutely right.
And a quick clarification, too. You mentioned eggs, not a NPDES, subject to NPDES. So then it's a non-point?
That's right.
Yes.
Everything that's not right. NPDES is a non-point source.
Okay.
Let me just follow up on the federal side here. Where is it? Oh, I'm going backwards.
Because isn't the Klamath rife with federal and agencies up there, and there's tons of them that are players in this?
That's right. And a federal agency, by the way, can discharge waste in California. If you discharge waste in California, you're subject to this agency's jurisdiction. I should say that the federal preemption case law that we've been grappling with on the Klamath for hydroelectric facilities, that preemption case law does not apply for Bureau of Reclamation. So the state water laws in California are not federally preempted. Ask the Supreme Court. I don't know. I mean, the cases were decided very close together, but there's no federal preemption for discharges of waste from BUREC, which does water supply, even though they had a similar savings clause in the Reclamation Act as the Federal Power Act. Go figure. But so discharges of waste from a federal facility in California are subject to waste discharge requirements. Also, Water Code Section 313 applies to federal facilities.
But a facility in the definition of facility, I mean, if, say, like the Klamath, where the Klamath project, where we move, not we, water is moved by the Bureau of Rec, right, through the Lower Klamath project, we actually have authority there. That's the facility is the whole Klamath project,
that's
correct?
Right. Yes. And, you know, there's got to be a discharge of waste in California, and there are on the Lost River. But, you know, once you have a discharge of waste, unless it's federally preempted, we have all the tools available, all our traditional regulatory tools. It's just when, you know, if there's a discharge of waste in Oregon, for instance, or if it's not a discharge of waste. But, yes, exactly. I mean, all these other tools, too, these are standard regulatory tools except for the last bullet. Those are all, and also 13267, that's not linked to discharge. But all these other ones are linked either to a discharge or a threatened discharge of waste in California. We need a flow chart. Huh? Okay.
Well, and sitting here thinking about it, I trust that we're going to come back to this and review our understanding of this complicated mess over months ahead of us, whether or not, I mean, I'm somewhat, PowerPoint is useful to help understand, and if it's flying over at a high level, some of this nuance, this, when you get down to the specifics and some, you know, does this cover that agency or not, you know, besides the flowchart, I'm debating whether or not to ask for a more detailed legal write-up of these things, which help describe, again, the PowerPoint's kind of nice to get the broad view, but it's the detail that really matters, and whether or not we need it or if we just get it as we remind ourselves that we've had it as a PowerPoint and kind of a brief overlook of it, but the detail will follow.
Can I make a suggestion? I mean, this really was meant to just give some background. We aren't suggesting that you're going to see all of these things in the Klamath. I just really meant to broad brush sort of the regulatory world in prep for the next discussion, which is going to get into details about our implementation on each source in the Klamath. And then if we need more legal analysis at that point, but again, we're still scoping, but I'd be happy to provide a written legal analysis. We're going to need it if we're doing any of these sort of outlier weird things. We'll definitely need a legal analysis for that.
I can see where the
Mr. Massey's request for flowchart may be helpful, though, because for each of these issues that we're going to see on the technical level, it's almost like each one is going to follow its own particular pathway for how we're going to address that. And it seems like you've given us the broad overview of the different pathways that we have to possibly choose from, you know, and kind of starting off of, well, just depending on is this a point or a non-point source, and then trickling down from there. So this seems to cover all of that, but I think in parallel, maybe what we're talking about here is to have that as well.
And I think just as long as we understand, I think it's almost all flowcharts will be a simplification if you talk long enough with the attorney. So I think what it can do is be very helpful to the board and give the general, but it gets so complicated on this particular issue. Maybe Samantha can do it, but I would have a little sympathy that she's going to provide us quite detailed guidance. It'll be really good, but it there is the possibility of one thing not being covered or reset, and you don't want a rat's nest because I don't think people understand a rat's nest. So.
I wanted to make one comment. I'm Matt St. John, lead for the TMDL Development Unit. One thing that Ben Zabinski is going to tell you in the next presentation is that we have a summary document of our implementation plan. So it's a Word document that describes both what Samantha has just gone over as well as what Ben will be going over. So we actually already have a summary of what Samantha has just done included in this kind of introductory section of what will become eventually the implementation plan chapter of the TMDL. And this summary chapter, so to speak, is going to be released for an administrative review and is certainly available to the board members in just a matter of days. I mean, we have it at an internal review draft level, and we just need to make some finalizations. So I think that may serve what you're asking for.
I could just sense the wave of excitement going through. All right. I think we're done for the morning, and we will be back at 1 o'clock to take up the next part of the item 5. It's
a little tricky to know.
Okay. We'll pick up with... But now I see the backside of staff, so I'm not sure.
We have an all-points bulletin for Mr. Zabinski.
Chairman Anderson, I just want to clarify from my last presentation that it's the New Zealand mud snail, not a clam.
Not the what?
It's not a clam.
Not a clam?
Clams don't exist in freshwater, I've learned.
Yeah, actually, they are. There are freshwater clams.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, I should just stop talking now.
Be careful. You're going to... If you get into freshwater clams, Samantha,
afternoon session?
There's a zebra.
The chair is going to take
also.
Control of this here shortly. Okay, key staff are close to the room. And for Ben, you're lucky you missed the preamble to this session this afternoon, or you'd get nervous if you heard the goofiness that we're...
I don't know if that allays my nervousness.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Anderson, members of the board. My name is Ben Zabinski. I work in the TMDL unit. I'm working on the Klamath implementation plan, and my presentation is on the status of the development of the plan. Okay. So the Klamath implementation plan is based on the technical TMDLs on which staff has recently presented to you. The technical TMDLs identify the sources of impairments in the Klamath River in California and assign load allocations and targets to meet water quality standards. So it is the job of the implementation plan to chart the way to achieving those reductions using the regional board regulatory tools and to monitor progress towards meeting the TMDL. Lower this a little bit. Yeah. So the implementation plan will do this by first identifying the responsible parties and then by selecting the appropriate tools that, when implemented, will achieve compliance. It can also recommend specific actions for the responsible parties to take to comply with the TMDL. And staff are in the process of soliciting input from the public, stakeholders, and government agencies on the approach to implementation. And I'm present to you today an overview of the implementation issues, what is required for compliance, and a discussion of the board's regulatory options. So here's a map of the Klamath Basin showing the impairments that are listed on the 303D list of impaired waters for the Klamath River in California. The dissolved oxygen organic enrichment listing only applies to the main stem of the Klamath River. The microcystin listing only applies to the main stem river and the reach from the Oregon-California border to the downstream end of the Iron Gate Reservoir, so just like this little reach. The sediment listing applies only to the lower Klamath Basin, which is from the Trinity confluence to the estuary. Starting here, whoa, shaky. The TMDLs address all these listed impairments except the sediment listing. Okay, so this table shows the TMDL development schedule with the target dates for meeting the December 2010 consent decree deadline for US EPA approval of the TMDLs in California. The peer review draft will soon be sent to the reviewers, and staff are in the process of developing a draft implementation plan summary for public review. That was mentioned earlier. In spring, staff will hold scoping workshops on the draft summary, and all the comments from the peer reviews and the public reviews will be incorporated as needed into a public review draft that is scheduled for release in May 2009. And then after that comment period, the TMDL will be considered for adoption. Okay, so before I get into details of the implementation plan, I want to discuss a little bit about the requirements of all implementation plans by state law and policy. So the California Water Code requires the identification of the nature of actions to be required of responsible parties, and the next two elements have to do with tracking and effectiveness. The timeline ensures that discharges are taking actions as quickly as possible to meet the TMDLs, and the monitoring program tracks implementation and progress towards meeting allocations and targets. Another important requirement of the plan is that it achieve compliance with the state non-point source policy. And this policy requires the board to regulate all non-point sources of discharge of waste through some combination of board regulatory tools. One of the purposes of the implementation plan then is to recommend the appropriate combination of WDRs, waivers, and prohibitions for all unregulated non-point source discharges in the Klamath River Basin in California. And so as we'll see in a little bit when I discuss watershed-wide implementation and non-point sources, there are quite a number of unregulated discharges, although permits are currently being developed by staff to address those. So this map shows the land cover classes for the basin. The green represents irrigated agriculture. And the majority of that acreage is part of the Klamath Irrigation Project in the Upper Basin. So that's this whole area right here. So the project spans California and Oregon and is mostly in the Lost River Basin. Agriculture and grazing are present in the eastern portion of the Klamath Basin, the Scott and Shasta. You can see a lot of the grazing land around the Shasta there. And then there's the Scott with the irrigated agriculture. And the western Klamath Basin is much wetter and more forested, where timber harvest is the main land use, and there are significant road networks built to support it. The U.S. Forest Service manages two-thirds of the Klamath Basin in California in several national forests, and private timber companies also own a significant amount of acreage. So here's another map of the Klamath Basin showing the source categories that were identified in technical TMDLs. The implementation plan will be organized according to these categories, which include the loads coming across the state line, and all these. This incorporates all the loadings upstream of the state line. And then there's the Klamath Hydroelectric Project in the four reservoirs, and three of those reservoirs are in California. There's also an MPDS point source discharge from the Iron Gate Hatchery. And then there's the land use impacts and land use activities in the California portion of the basin that include all the tributaries. So that's pretty much the whole rest of the watershed here. So each category has its own set of allocations, targets, and responsible parties, and will be addressed separately in the implementation plan. So in the next part, I'll go through each category and describe staff's approach. So the first category is water quality at the Oregon-California state line. There are high nutrient loads in organic matter in Oregon that are mainly coming from Upper Klamath Lake and the Lost River Basin, part of which is in California. The Klamath or the California TMDL allocates nutrient and organic matter loads at the state line to meet water quality standards. The Oregon and California TMDLs were developed together and used the same modeling and analysis to develop their load allocations and made them consistent. In other words, when the Oregon TMDL is implemented, it will result in meeting the load allocations at state line. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality will write a separate implementation plan to meet the Oregon load allocations and targets. Okay, and here's more of a description of what the Oregon implementation will look like, most likely. So DEQ, which is the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, will issue NPDES permits for point sources, but it does not have permitting authority over non-point source discharges. So Oregon's implementation plan differs from California in that they designate management agencies to each write their own implementation plans to implement the TMDLs, to meet the TMDLs. So these agencies have primary enforcement authority over non-point sources, while ODEQ authority is secondary. Since meeting water quality standards in California depends on Oregon reducing the loading at state line, regional board staff are developing an MOA with ODEQ and with both EPA regions on both sides of the border to coordinate implementation. Okay, next is the Klamath Hydroelectric Project, which is owned by PacifiCorp. While the TMDLs require compliance with the load allocations and targets assigned to the project, the regional board is preempted from issuing WDR since the hydro project is federally licensed. This license recently expired and is being considered for renewal by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. The means for regulating water quality from the hydro project is through the terms of the new license that must be certified by the State Water Board through a 401 water quality certification. The certification must put conditions on the project that meet state water quality standards. Since the TMDLs will be adopted into the basin plan, the implementation measures must be considered by FERC in the licensing decision. So FERC and the State Board are considering a number of alternatives as part of the relicensing process, including changes to project operations and removal of some or all of the project dams. So, too, the implementation plan must consider a variety of options to address reservoir and dam-related water quality impacts in California. The implementation time schedules and measures may vary depending on which project alternative is selected. Regardless of any future changes to the hydropower project, the 401 certification must incorporate conditions that require the project to meet the TMDL allocations and targets. This will be enforced for the alternative that proposes continued operation of the project, as well as for any alternative that considers dam removal. PacifiCorp must also implement adequate water quality control measures to offset ongoing reservoir impacts as the reservoirs are modified to meet the load allocations and targets, or alternatively, up to the time they are decommissioned. So regional board staff are providing comments on appropriate measures for this interim period to the State Water Board as part of the public comments on the 401 certification. And we're also in the process of seeking out public input on potential implementation measures and time schedules. Recently, representatives from the state of California, led by the Resources Agency, the state of Oregon, the Federal Department of Interior, and PacifiCorp released an agreement in principle, AIP, that sets up a process to consider the decommissioning of the Klamath Hydroelectric Project. The regional board was not a party to these negotiations. However, staff are now providing input on certain interim measures listed in the AIP in an effort to better align that process with the TMDL. It is staff's view that the AIP offers opportunities for improving water quality through proposals such as venting, restoration, monitoring, and a water quality conference, and any final agreements stemming from the AIP could become a vehicle for TMDL compliance if it were to contain actions that meet TMDL requirements. Currently, there are substantive gaps between the AIP and the draft TMDLs. For example, the AIP interim measures are insufficient to reduce current water quality impacts such as microcystin blooms or to eliminate harmful and potentially lethal conditions for fish in the reservoirs. Another concern is that the AIP creates uncertainty regarding how FERC relicensing will proceed. Any final agreement should clarify how the parties intend to address Clean Water Act compliance and the 401 certification. FERC is having a public meeting in Wairika today that may provide clarity. If the dams are to be removed, this board must also ensure the decommissioning project meets basin plan standards, and the regional board staff are currently drafting a basin plan amendment that would allow for temporary discharges from qualified restoration projects that would benefit water quality in the long term. So the next source category is the Iron Gate Fish Hatchery, which is currently regulated by an MPDS permit with an expiration date in 2004. But renewal of the permit may have to wait until the regional board updates its basin plan policy that addresses fish hatcheries. After the policy is revised, which should take place later this year, the TMDL allocations will be translated into effluent limits in the new permit. Currently, discharges from the hatchery exceed the TMDL load allocations, which would lead to more stringent effluent limitations in the new permit. The hatchery may be able to meet these new permit limits through pollutant trading with upstream sources. So in the last piece of this presentation, I'll discuss some of the restoration opportunities and how they may be incorporated into a pollutant trading program. Since the Klamath River TMDL considers the Klamath Basin as a whole, it therefore must consider the impacts of the tributaries on main stem water quality. The implementation plan may include additional measures in any of the tributary watersheds to meet the Klamath River TMDL. So in this part of the presentation, I'll discuss staff's approach to coordinating implementation in each of these tributaries, given existing TMDLs and implementation plans. So the table here shows the major tributaries, which all have adopted technical TMDLs. However, only the Scott, Shasta, and Salmon have adopted implementation plans. So the first tributary is the Lost River, which runs through both Oregon and California before joining the Klamath River in Oregon. The loading from the Lost River Basin to the Klamath River is conveyed through the man-made Klamath Straits drain. The Oregon Klamath TMDLs gives a load allocation to this drain where it discharges to the Klamath River. The TMDL analysis showed that large nutrient reductions are needed in the Klamath Straits drain in order for water quality objectives to be met in California, in the Klamath River in general. The EPA has completed a technical TMDL for the Lost River Basin, but only for the California portion. And Oregon is currently developing the Oregon portion and will release its own Lost River TMDL in conjunction with its Klamath River TMDLs. While the EPA Lost River TMDL recommended implementation actions in California, it is upon the state to develop the enforceable implementation plan. In the meantime, we are looking at early implementation measures that may be required of responsible parties in the Lost River Basin on the California side. Lost River measures may need to be included in the plan because of the immediate need to reduce pollutant loads coming from the Klamath Straits drain. So I'm going to take the next couple slides to explain our approach to the Lost River. And this map shows where the Lost River is. It starts here, and this is the upper Lost River. And then it enters Oregon, comes back down into California, into Tule Lake, and then crosses back over the border again and enters the Klamath here. So this the inset is going to be the map on the next page. Okay, So the Lost River flows in this direction and enters the Klamath River here. And you can see the Klamath River coming out of Upper Klamath Lake, and it wraps around that way. So this is the Klamath Straits drain right here, which discharges to the Klamath. This is about 30 miles upstream of the state line, you know, over here. And it's right above the Keno Reach. So most of the land on this... most of the land here is serviced by the Klamath Irrigation Project, including two U.S. Fish and Wildlife refuges in California, so the Tule Lake and Lower Klamath Lake. So a large part of the water supply in the irrigation project is diverted from the Klamath River through irrigation canals that are represented by these arrows here. The Bureau of Reclamation supplies this water to various irrigation districts that are included in the project. So here, water drains out of Lower Klamath Refuge over the border where it enters the Klamath Straits drain. And then at the end of the drain, water is pumped back into the Klamath River in Oregon. On the California side of the border, there are several discharges that contribute to the Lost River loading. There are discharges from individual landowners that are conveyed to the Lost River through the irrigation drainage network. And there are also discharges from the refuges. For example, here the Lost River is pumped from Tule Lake to Lower Klamath Lake through a tunnel in Sheepy Ridge. And historically, the Lost River just terminated in Tule Lake right here. So we're exploring regulatory options for controlling discharges of waste on the California side of the Lost River Basin. Oregon is including implementation measures in the Oregon portion of the Lost River Basin as part of their Klamath implementation plan. The loads from the Lost River may also be addressed through centralized treatment and could potentially become part of the pollution trading program. I'll discuss more about this later in the presentation. And we're currently gathering input through the upcoming scoping process on the preferred approach to addressing these discharges on the California side. So getting back to the source categories, this is the last one here. So this talks about the remaining tributaries and also discusses watershed-wide implementation. The Klamath River TMDLs assign several watershed-wide allocations and targets related to temperature that apply to the entire Klamath River Basin. These are meant to address impacts to temperature due to a variety of land uses through protection of riparian shade and channel alterations caused by sediment discharge. The land uses were categorized into source areas in the technical TMDL and include timber harvest, roads, grazing, and irrigated agriculture. Since these source areas are non-point sources, they will be regulated consistent with the state non-point source policy, which again requires that the board use a combination of regulatory tools, WDRs, waivers, or prohibitions. Timber harvest is currently regulated through board permits, and the TMDL targets and allocations will be incorporated into those permits when they are updated. Much of the basin roads, grazing, and irrigated agriculture are currently not regulated through a permitting mechanism. The implementation plan will recommend a mechanism to control discharges from these activities, and these permits would require dischargers to implement management practices, BMPs, that maintain the potential riparian shade to the water body and also to control sediment sources on their lands, which is tied to these watershed-wide allocations. Another issue that comes up in the watershed-wide discussion is the thermal refugia in the Klamath main stem. These are areas of cold water that are accessible from the main stem Klamath River, where fish can escape the typically elevated daytime temperatures during the summer. While the technical TMDL did not assign a target to specifically protect refugia, it did confirm their importance in supporting beneficial uses. So the implementation plan will consider measures to ensure their functions are protected. Part of the protection will be provided through the implementation of these watershed-wide allocations for temperature that I just described, the riparian shade and the sediment sources. However, staff is considering buffers that would limit activity around the mouths of tributaries where they enter the Klamath River, since this is where the majority of the refugia exist. The buffers would address the potential impact of suction dredging and other activities from impairing their function of the function of refugia in the Klamath system. The buffers could be implemented through the Department of Fish and Game permits for suction dredging currently being developed in consultation with the State Water Board. Okay, so I'll discuss the potential for pollutant trading and centralized treatment to reduce the nutrient loads that I was talking about before. And this is due to the immediate need to reduce pollutant loads at state line. It may be more beneficial to water quality to reduce nutrients upstream of state line in exchange for reducing loads farther downstream. Pollutant trading has been successful in other basins, such as the Russian River, where the board is working with the city of Santa Rosa to offset nutrient loading from the Laguna treatment plant. We're considering the economic and technological feasibility of a number of centralized treatment options, including wetlands, harvesting of algae to produce biofuels and fertilizer, and small-scale conventional wastewater treatment systems. PacifiCorp and the Bureau of Reclamation have already initiated a feasibility study of treatment wetlands located in the upper basin on both sides of the border. And also, the agreement in principle includes as one of its interim measures a water quality conference. And this conference could provide a forum for exploring these ideas further. Monitoring and associated timelines to achieve TMDL compliance. This is another required element of an implementation plan. And this serves two main purposes. They track discharger implementation through self-reporting and inspections, such as in a permit. And it also tracks in-stream water quality trends on a basin-wide level. TMDL monitoring provides feedback to the board to use when considering the need for potential changes to the implementation program. The water quality data and discharger compliance information can be compared to implementation timelines to gauge the effectiveness of the program. Monitoring information can also be used to refine TMDL targets and allocations. And staff are coordinating with the Klamath Basin Monitoring Group to develop a plan to monitor water quality trends, while staff will seek input from dischargers on implementation monitoring and timelines. And a draft monitoring plan and implementation timeline are currently being developed and may be included in the draft implementation summary that is scheduled to be released to the public in early February. So that concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you, Ben. Board member questions? One at the end, Ben, in terms of monitoring, what's the status of the current data collection? Are we full up or do we need more?
It's an ongoing process. So that's part of what this water quality monitoring group is doing, is looking at all the different agencies and entities that are collecting monitoring data are participating in this group. And that effort is attempt to coordinate all the different monitoring that's going on and see where the gaps are and to come up with a basin-wide monitoring plan, which wouldn't be the TMDL implementation monitoring plan, but you know that could fulfill a lot of the needs of that of the TMDL plan. So that's the process for that.
And Mr. Chairman, if you're looking for more detailed information, Clayton Krieger of our staff could wax poetic on monitoring and what we know and what we don't.
We'll take a vote on the waxing part of that after this.
As Ben mentioned, there is an ongoing effort that was organized by your staff. We have contracted with the Klamath Watershed Institute to basically coordinate the efforts of a large number of entities, both agencies and private organizations that are currently conducting monitoring within the Klamath Basin to come up with a more coherent network of to eliminate redundant sampling, to use common protocols, to report into a consolidated database for data sharing. And we were hoping to have it, you know, ready for this year, but that's not ready yet. It's not ready for this. And the TMDL monitoring requirements should largely be addressed through this effort. Maybe not all, but most. And we've had an opportunity here recently through the AIP The parties are required to develop a monitoring plan for the Klamath Basin for the project area down. And this evolving plan through the Water Quality Coordination Group is not ready yet, but that we've asked the parties to bring the AIP plan within that framework, the coordination framework, so that we can benefit from those efforts. It's a $500,000 annual effort, and they can benefit from the input from the coordination group. So those efforts are ongoing, and we had a conference call just yesterday regarding the, or the day before yesterday, regarding the ability to comment on that plan and to make sure that it's consistent with the evolving plan, the longer-term plan.
And you said 500,000. Is that on the AIP side that they're
bringing? Is on the AIP side. That is, it was when PacifiCorps signed the agreement, the water quality monitoring portion of the agreement was in effect and is in effect this year, and they would like to be in the field by April. And so we have a very compressed window that we're working within here, which is why this year it will be an interim plan. We will have to use different measures to get in the field on time than we would like to for the long term. We'd like the long-term plan to be within this larger framework that Ben was describing earlier.
Okay. Mr. Horn?
Ben, am I right that you showed the lost as you took the lost all the way out straight strain, is that correct?
Yep.
You don't terminate the lost at Tule Lake?
No, I said I meant historically. That's where it ended.
Historically it did, but the Tule Lake, the Sheepy Ridge tie made it go all the way through straight strain. So are we, but we've allocated a load to straight strain.
Yes.
Under
Oregon. It's in Oregon, yes.
And I recall it was like an 18% allocation or something like that. But are we actually going to handle straight strain in the Lost TMDL or the Klamath TMDL?
In the Klamath TMDL, our, I guess, jurisdiction would be on the California side, and then that's where we're working with Oregon to address the sources on the Oregon side. There's also the Lost River TMDL that was done by the EPA, and there's, yes.
The Lost River itself, not,
yes, Lost
and the
River.
Lost River does not include the Tule Lake tie and Lower Klamath straight strain, correct?
No, it does. It's all part of the Lost River Basin.
Okay.
The Klamath straight strain is part of the basin. It's not called the Lost River at that point.
Right. Because
it's man-made.
And it's artificial.
Yes. But it is part of the basin. And since it was in Oregon, it wasn't part of the California Lost River TMDL. It only went to the border. But it did address
right.
Tule Lake and the Lower Klamath Lake.
Yeah. So to get back to what Samantha presented to us earlier, some of the tools that we have then coming out of Tule Lake at Sheepy Ridge or on Straight Strain on our side,
yes,
we have some tools that we can use and implement, whether it be the Bureau of Rec or Tule Lake Irrigation District or a collective of farmers under a programmatic thing, or there's a myriad of tools that must be available for there. Not that it'll be easy, but...
Yeah. Well, that's why, right, exactly. That's why I was mentioning those discharges on the California side to present that as option.
And we see then the straight strain coming back into Klamath River. Actually, it's not ours, but is that a point source, non-point source?
It's a non-point source.
Or is it either?
I guess that's... Discrete non-point source, Clayton.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you in a corner there.
No,
I think
that I mean there is ongoing lawsuit on that point. I think
this is Samantha. There's a phantom lawsuit apparently challenging that it requires an MPDS, but for now we got to assume that it's a non-point source, even though it looks like a point source. I mentioned in my presentation that ag runoff is specifically exempted in the Clean Water Act from MPDS permits. So we'll just go ahead with that. I think they get a load allocation for that reason.
Thanks.
The emphasis on the landscape engineering and the pollutant trading is because of these sort of unique conveyance facilities that are networked throughout the system. and has provided a collection points for what traditionally would be treated under the non-point source program on a farm-by-farm basis. It's been collected, it's in channel, and we would like to look at the opportunity to use that conveyance facility to capture and treat a large part of this organic and nutrient loading to the Klamath River.
At the same time, Clayton, the flow out of Sheepy Ridge, Tule Lake Tie, is a very, there's seasonality to that because that's in essence a tailwater from, not tailwater, but it's a return water from an irrigation system.
Right.
So, I mean, it seems like from a treatment, are you talking about like using Lower Klamath Refuge perhaps as a enhanced wetland?
Well, this conference that Ben mentioned that is also part of the AIP settlement, the purpose of that conference is to look at the feasibility of various options for this landscape engineering. Small treatment system here, small treatment system there, a treatment wetland there, sort of what is the optimal mix for reaching those allocation targets that we've set in the technical TMDL. And so possibly a treatment system at the mouth of the Klamath Straits drain, because that discharge does occur during the critical period, the growth period, which is when the algae has the largest effect on water quality.
A question regarding the trading program, and you cited that we've had one going or
started
in Santa Rosa. Would the trading program be one that's then run out of this shop, or what kind of mechanics are involved in making it work?
I'm not too sure on that.
We're still scouting.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's the truth. I mean, trading programs are really controversial, especially the wider out you get on a watershed. And so right now I think we're looking forward to going up and having a workshop and hearing from people. You know, we're not even there on the nuts and bolts of how a trading program would work.
The purpose of the landscape engineering workshop is not only to evaluate technical feasibility, but also what is the organizational framework and the organizational feasibility of that kind of system, trading system and treatment systems.
I'm not sure I want to wade in on this, but I will in terms of the, to me, an implementation plan, we're putting something out suggesting this is a way to go. At the same time, we don't, maybe in this case, maybe in TMDLs, we do recommend alternatives or suggested pathways to get to the end. I guess I'm trying to sort out what responsibility we have to put forward something that's workable and addresses the problem, or do we just park the problem on somebody else's doorstep and say, well, we've identified the problem, get back to us when you know the solution and we'll tell you if the solution works or not.
There are a lot of examples of this type of landscape engineering treatment wetlands in existence. And in fact, within the basin, Bureau of Reclamation is currently running a pilot program, you know, which would be a featured part of this workshop. And it is all kind of falling on top of itself in this time frame here. But we would like to try to capture as much of that in whatever final TMDL, you know, whenever that occurs, we'd like to get as much of that in as possible. So, but the timing of this workshop hasn't even been discussed yet. You're right. We would like to have as much of it, though, represented as possible.
If I could elaborate, too, I mean, traditionally the trading is meant to work in a TMDL. I think it was set up so that states that only regulated point source, they would clamp down on all the point source discharges, and that would lead those folks to go out and sort of execute these creative solutions. And you could see how that would work. You know, you can either, you know, eliminate your discharge, that's what I have control over, or you can come up and you tell me a better way. I think that that could work also with just between non-point sources. And so that is definitely one option, is to say, you're on the hook, what do you have, and let's hear, you know, your proposals. I think that's a very efficient way for the water board to go. And right now I think we're just trying to raise the idea because we know that certain discussions and studies are going on, and so we want to be open to ideas in this regard.
And how are we doing on the schedule? That recall, I don't recall exactly. We had a presentation in December, and I think at that time there was some comment I made in terms of the pig squealing, and I thought that in December we were looking at the implementation plan prior to this meeting. And now I'm hearing that, well, it'll be in February. I'm not so worried about reporting to us, but in terms of getting this in front of other people to react to and hearing the squealing coming back, I mean, are we on track time-wise?
Well, I think it is true that at our December meeting, this is Matt St. John, again, of your staff. It was stated that our goal was to have this summary document of the implementation plan be released ahead of the board meeting. And frankly, the Whitewater Rapid Class 4 has meant that we are still working through our internal draft. We are very close, and so I think at this point we're now thinking that that will be released in early next month, so that's kind of next week time frame. In the long, the whole schedule standpoint, though, we're still on target. We're still moving towards the reality that we need to get out to our full public review. That's both of the technical work as well as the implementation plan by this spring, and I think that we're on target to do that.
Were there dates for these public workshops as we go forward? There were kind of months attached to them. Are they set up and ready to go, or we're still waiting for the release of documents before initial? Yeah.
We haven't set specific dates. It'll probably be in March at this point. We'll get the document released, have folks some time to, you know, 3 to 4 weeks to review it, and then schedule a road trip, you know, where we'll be holding a series of public meetings.
I'd just like to clarify expectations here, though. What we're putting out next week at the very, very soonest will be a scoping document, so it won't say this is how we propose to implement. It's more along the lines of what you've just seen of here's the problem, here are some options, and here who we think is responsible for causing the problem. And so I'm not sure that pig will squeal when we put it out.
It might.
Samantha's hopeful, however.
I mean, I think it's important to have that in front of folks. Again, we're under a time crunch in this calendar year, and I don't know if that, my sense, this board has to act in a timely fashion so it can get to the state board to act by the calendar year is, I think, my understanding. So,
that's correct.
I see by the schedule we're in Yreka in October, and that, you know, so far we're set for one day and one meeting and in the door and out the door the same day. So, but that's the time frame we're faced with. I'm just, I guess, work in advance is important, and we get it done so we can actually perform in October and get this thing resolved.
Well, maybe you can tell us. I mean, that we crafted the document, which is largely what you've seen here, hopefully to have enough information to generate the squeals. What we want to do is hear from people. So we want enough information to hear people's concerns, but we don't want to, we want to preserve all our flexibility and options. That's our intent here. And if, you know, let us know if that came across or not. Maybe we need to be more specific. I'm not sure, but that was the intention, is to bring the parties out and engage in a dialogue at this point.
Well, my assessment would be I heard more of what the problem is, and I'm not sure I heard, if I were there, what my portion of the solution is and what I think it needs to
drill down a bit.
And our hope for the document is that that will facilitate the discussions that we will have this spring. We didn't want to, as we have in the past, as you know, the first implementation plan we've put out has basically offered what some people ought to be doing. And so we thought to avoid that step and first come out with, since we had a little bit more time here, come out first with the identification. You're going to need to come up with a solution. You can work with us to craft what that's going to be. So that's kind of that's our thought process.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hales.
It's a sound approach, and I think it's the right approach to do. And that's what's going to allow people to review and understand, you know, what exactly the information we're trying to solicit from them. It seems, though, that we still have a big gap to bridge between the actual implementation plan and what we've seen here today. So I just, echo our chairman's concern about being able to meet the implementation plan timelines and if that implementation plan is serving as a critical pathway to completing the TMDL. So whether we need to still convey this information yet be a little bit more direct, we might want to consider that.
Okay.
Mr. Massey.
It may be a somewhat sensitive subject, but we are included on some discussions and we are not included on others. And eventually, after the dams are or are not removed and decisions are made, we are still going to be left with a problem of water quality for the Klamath River in the state of California. And I'm wondering what your feeling is, and perhaps this is for the executive officer, in terms of the cooperation of other entities, which once these decisions are made, they will have the privilege of leaving, and we are going to remain dealing with water quality for the state of California. Are we getting cooperation? Do we anticipate that, or where are we?
I think certainly, you know, you're well aware of the work in the tributaries. On the main stem, we're making really good progress, we feel, with the U.S. Forest Service in adopting an approach to how we're going to deal with all of the forested land, which is the biggest land use in the basin. We also have good ongoing discussions with Oregon, and we'll be, as Ben noted, adopting an MOU to deal with implementation cross-border. So the relationship is good. I think, as Ben noted, we have some concerns about how that's going to actually work in the future. I think Oregon does as well. So in terms of the two biggest sources, Oregon, we have good relation. U.S. Forest Service, that's moving along really well. We're beginning to have more discussions with the Bureau of Reclamation. We'll see where that leads. And I think we're all pretty excited with the idea of having a water quality conference that could explore more fully this idea of a centralized solution, which could be a way that we don't have to get in and deal with cleaning up water quality farmer by farmer, rancher by rancher. And if we could get to that and get good acceptance around that, if that is a good solution and is an affordable solution, we could just be in a lot better place than we thought we would be. Answer your question?
It does, and at another level it doesn't, only because we have been in the past left with the residuals of our not being included in discussions of water quality. I'm saying by virtue of seniority that I would if it is of any value to you as the executive officer, I certainly would be quite willing to raise that concern. I don't know that I would have the agreement of the board, but I would like to raise that concern that we really want to be included in the discussion of anything from dam removal to non-dam removal, that we are going to be doing the water quality long after this decision has been rendered and implemented. We're still going to be here, and many of those will not.
And in response to that, Mr. Massey, it's been an uphill battle to be included. I don't feel we are included yet. I've been taking, since the direction from the board in December, I've taken a number of steps to try to be included, had a number of conversations with resources. Mr. Hales and Mr. Anderson talked with Mr. Baggett So there have been a number of conversations. I still don't feel like we're getting the information or being consulted in the way that we should be. I am profoundly concerned that we're going to get some decisions given to us with some conclusions about water quality that this water quality agency, with all of its expertise, will not be able to accept. And that it's avoidable right now, and so I hope we can avoid it. But I'm not confident at this moment. Does that answer your question?
It does, and let me say that at any point in the future in this entire discussion, if there is anything that we as a board can do, by all means, please let us know. We will act as one voice, I'm sure, to express that concern, because we will be left with the problem of water quality long after others have gone. Thank you very much for your efforts as well.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Noren.
On one other thing, though, how do we leave enough room within the implementation part of this thing for the things that, like, you know, Clayton was talking about, that we have potential out there for other things, land farming, I think you called it, some type of land management here, which maybe we're short on specifics right now simply because they're not there. So how do we include that in this document? You know, do we leave ourselves enough runway there to, you know, get that out there in a timely manner and include it into a TMDL if it's simply in formulation stage or maybe even in wishful thinking stage, and it's fine if it's there, but how do we do that and include it and make it meaningful now?
Okay, so maybe this didn't come across enough, but the document itself has a lot of specifics on the watershed-wide portion of the implementation plan in California. It talks a lot about the U.S. Forest Service, talks about grazing. So we have those specifics, and those will be circulated. And perhaps we were focusing more on the more difficult areas mm-hmm. today. But when you see the document, there's lots of Ben's done lots of work for 2 years now on that piece of it. That's fairly well fleshed out.
Are you referring to the landscape engineering?
Yeah, and trading. And I'm just talking about just being able to leave it kind of open-ended without being, you know, very right. nonspecific, but leave yourself a door to say, listen, basically everything's on the table. We're gonna make them squeal just because, you know, that information's going to be so big and that they're bound to, and that we're going to push it out there and see what happens, and yet we want to have enough flexibility within our program to make this thing successful. And how do we do that, I guess, is my question. How do we leave ourselves that option now mm-hmm. within our program? Because we're trying to be specific, but you're kind of being specific about something that's not quite sure.
Well, if you want to make them squeal.
I'm not so sure I want to make them squeal.
There, you know, we can be much more specific about, you know, early, for example, early implementation on the lost. We do list potentially responsible parties there. I think that should be enough to get folks' attention.
Yeah, I guess
to bring to the table these other options that we're hoping to see.
Yeah, and I guess my thing is, wouldn't you rather have them do that now than down the road?
Yes.
I mean, you want to flesh that out now. That's the whole point of doing this, right?
Yes.
Or at least one major point of doing that. You want to get that reaction now and see if you could start to make it happen. And
I think in the document that we'll be releasing, we'll try and describe the scope of the different possibilities of how that can happen. But yeah, I agree that there is a lot out in the open in terms of that. So I don't, I don't really have too much of an answer for that.
It's okay.
Well, it's going to be, let me just elaborate. I mean, it's going to be a combination of emphasizing where we have jurisdiction mm-hmm. and then putting enough out there about this restoration potential so that they get they understand the idea that you could come up with an alternative rather than prohibiting your discharge entirely. You know, it's a two-part process. That's where it comes in. And so we're talking about restoration just at the end, and maybe we're not tying it in enough, but if we are concrete enough about where we have jurisdiction and over who, those parties ought to be drawn then to the restoration section. I would be, if I was listed as a responsible party, anybody listed as a responsible party ought to review the restoration section to see if it makes sense for them. Does that make sense?
We would hope.
What's that?
We would hope.
I would hope. I mean, that's why we put it in there, just so people, we don't want people to freak out necessarily. We want to
you know, we don't want to come out and just say we're going to make you do something right the second. But we want it to be concrete enough to know that we can make you do something. So this is the balance, and so we want to make sure we get it right because we are trying to flesh out this discussion now, and maybe we're not. We need to be more specific about where the discharges of waste are and who's discharging them. That's, you know, one of the issues on the loss is we don't have all the information. We have a general sense of who the parties are, so we don't want to make a mistake either. I would think that if your entity or name was listed as a responsible party, you would pay attention to what we have written there. But we'll take another look before we circulate it, make sure that that's clear.
Oh, I can't help myself. As an old Iowa farm boy, but when you're sorting hogs, you got to give them a place to go. That's, you know, you. If you don't, you're in trouble. So, I mean, you. It's.
Well, I heard pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered.
I mean, I think, you know, the point being, it's to Samantha's point that if we tell them that we've identified that they have a problem, they'll pay attention. I think we have to go one step beyond that and give not here's what you do about it, but here's some range of what you do about it, or here's, you know, if you want to do one thing that's big, we're happy with that, and here's six things that are small, and if you do five of them, we're happy with that. I mean, there's some kind of way to, what does it mean that I have this problem? Because we're asking for some action on their part, and I just think if we say problem, they'll take a while to figure out what do we mean by that. And, you know, I respect that we can't, it's a delicate balance trying to not say, well, here are the, you know, you can upset them by saying here are the things we want you to do, because that gets their back up too. So, but I do think we need to know what it is that we think is the solution, and mm-hmm. and give it some concrete, it works, this is good enough, if you do these things, we're happy. We're not saying you have to do these things, but we can at least tell you these things, if they're done, make us happy. I think we owe them that much. So my apologies to Daniel. I let the board go on a little further than we normally would, but it's, I think, useful discussion. But public comment, we have a card from Daniel Myers.
Thank you. I'm Daniel Myers. I'm a co-plaintiff, and I'm representing the Friends of the Navarro in the consent decree. I appreciate the efforts that staff have put into this. I think we've been treated well, and you won't hear any squealing from me, but I can't speak for the other co-plaintiffs. I know some that are local are sick, and many, many more are at the FERC hearing today and would have liked to have been at this meeting. I think it's been informative and productive with the problems that this project faces. I can see that, in the absence of the consent decree, there would be excellent reasons for putting this off for quite a few more years until the dust settles. And so I know the problem is difficult, but that's why we have smart people here to deal with it. I don't know that we have enough smart people. That's my only problem. On my river, the Navarro River, it was scheduled to be completed in 2004, and more recently the schedule was changed to 2017. And there's a new 303D schedule coming out on Monday, and I'm interested to see what year I'll be looking for relief on my river. I don't want to make that a sour note, but this is what we'll be doing for the next 3 or 4 years, and we need more people to work on our other problems. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other members of the public want to make comment? And we're board members, questions or comments to staff or to the good of the order? Staff need any other clarification? Then we're done. Okay.